Fresh, local food is all the rage, and restaurants are filling the demand. But how much of farm to table is really farm to fable? This is Florida Matters.
Support for Florida Matters comes from the Hospitals of BayCare Health System, providing more than 100 health seminars, classes, and events each month. BayCare's mission is to build a healthier Tampa Bay. Register for a complimentary health seminar, class, or event at baycareevents.org.
From WUSF Public Media, I'm Robin Sussingham. In this post-Michael Pollan era, many consumers are demanding locally grown food. Other buzzwords are organic and sustainable. Maybe it costs more, but we're willing to pay because it makes us feel like we're eating healthy. We're being environmentally responsible. And it just sounds more delicious to hear that Farmer Jones down the road just picked it this morning. But how do we really know if that supposedly locally grown tomato is from Ruskin, Florida, or from Sinaloa, Mexico? That's the question that my guest decided to investigate. Laura Riley is the food critic for the Tampa Bay Times and recently wrote the series Farm to Fable. The series has the tagline, "At Tampa Bay farm-to-table restaurants, you're being fed fiction." Laura Riley, welcome to Florida Matters.
Thanks for having me today.
You've been reviewing restaurants that say that their produce or their seafood or their beef is grown or caught in the local area. So what made you interested in looking into these claims of local food?
I've been doing, in the past 2 or 3 years, I've done a lot of agriculture writing for the Tampa Bay Times. And one thing that I've heard repeatedly from small farmers around the state is that their products are being misrepresented on menus and they don't know what to do. The small pork farmer, they get on the red hot celebrity chef of the moment kind of menu or chalkboard. The chef buys from them 5 or 6 times, and then there's a cash flow problem and a commodity product gets subbed out. And that farmer doesn't quite know how to rectify the situation. So I kind of was hearing this frequently enough that I thought I'd take a look at it. I also think that we live in a state where there aren't nearly enough small farms to go around. And, you know, you start it, the math doesn't add up. You know, you start seeing it on 3 out of 4 menus, you know, grass-fed beef, et cetera. And you think, well, where are they getting it from?
And there's a small growing season for most things in Florida. It's
absolutely
hot here.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, the summer, if you see all kinds of local veg on the menu, you gotta raise one eyebrow.
What was your process for finding out about these claims, for digging them up? You got into their kitchen, you talked to people, you looked at their receipts, you talked to their distributors.
This was a very low-tech investigation, you know. I think that I'm sure there are lots of ways that one could do this. What I did was in my regular job, I started stealing menus and taking photographs of chalkboards and then making calls, you know. Okay, this chalkboard says Captain Kirk Morgan sold this restaurant snapper and grouper. So, you know, you look online, you find Captain Kirk Morgan, you give him a call. And in this particular case, Captain Kirk Morgan said, "I have no idea what you're talking about. You know, I've never sold at that restaurant. And what's more is I don't even catch snapper and grouper." So right up front, I found a few of those really egregious misrepresentations. And that certainly gave me the impetus to keep going.
Yeah, tell us some of the things that you found. You say the menu says the shrimp are wild caught in Florida, which sounds delicious, but they're actually farm raised in India, I guess frozen and then shipped over. So, I mean, that's amazing. Tell me about some of the things that you found.
There are times where I understand the financial, most restaurants, the margin of the profit margin is so tiny that the incentive to, you know, fib a little is very high. You know, if you're trying to keep a 30% food cost and you can make that, you can make your goal if you just change out your proteins for, you know, a cheaper product. And the truth is a lot of people don't notice stuff, right? I mean, if you go to a great restaurant and the lighting is great and you have a perfect date and you're having fun, how would you know if the meat in front of you is prime or choice, right? I mean, you just have to trust that the restaurateur is doing what they say they're doing.
You broke your article down into claims for produce, for seafood, and for beef. So give us some examples of some specifics of what you found in your reporting.
I think the saddest thing is seafood. I think that it's very frequently the one that is, you know, fraudulent. And I think in Florida, what we have to realize, and I heard this from a number of seafood purveyors, from fishermen themselves, most of the wonderful seafood that comes out of the Gulf gets sold in New York, in Canada, in Asia, because they're willing to pay for it. I think Floridians have this erroneous or, you know, confused idea of what fish should cost. And that's why we end up eating a lot of imported tilapia.
That's surprising, because it seems that we're surrounded by water and the fish should be inexpensive and it should come from right outside our door.
Well, I think that when you're talking about something like Florida grouper, there are competing pressures from Mexican grouper or from grouper further south, you know, further in South America, whatever. Labor costs are more meager, I guess, the further south you go. There are fewer regulations in terms of fisheries. It's cheaper fish, basically. And so for a Florida grouper fisherman, they are going to get the top dollar in Canada or in New York, in the big fish markets in New York.
Is there any reason to eat local fish? Does it taste better? Is the fish that comes from further away an inferior product?
I mean, I think frequently it is.
Tell me about some of the other things. The produce, I know, also you found.
Well, produce is the most interesting thing, because there are no DNA markers for local, right? You know, you can claim anything with produce, and there is no way to track back other than to look at invoices or to talk to those distributors. You know, you eat a salad and it's a bunch of greens and they say they're local greens. If they're actually, you know, spring mix from Mexico that has a carbon footprint of 3,000 miles, there's just no test that can be done to ascertain that.
So what you did was actually try to find the farms where this was growing and see if they did sell to that restaurant.
Yeah, just tracking back. And I think that there were a lot of small farmers that were pretty hesitant to be whistleblowers. You know, they have to work with these restaurants. There was a kind of a turning point where people started to say, I love that restaurant. I have a good relationship with that chef, but I've been on their chalkboard for a year and I haven't sold to them in, you know, 6 months.
What about your, talking about the relationship of the small farmers to the restaurants, what about your relationship with the restaurants? You're a restaurant reviewer, a food critic. You named names. You didn't pull any punches. You said this restaurant was doing X and this restaurant was doing Y, and you proved it, and you had DNA samples sent away. Can you go back in those restaurants? How's your relationship? Have you burned any bridges?
I'm sure there are some people that are very upset with me. And you know, the irony is that almost all of the restaurants that I outed are restaurants that I've reviewed favorably over the years and you know, thought very well of and said kind things about. So I hope that I have the opportunity to, you know, re-review them and to kind of rebuild those relationships. You know, I think sometimes you got to break a few eggs, right?
One thing that was surprising was how open some of the chefs and owners were with you. They fessed up immediately. They said, yeah, we're doing it. And sometimes it almost came across as kind of nonchalant. And I'm thinking that they're thinking, this is how the restaurant industry works.
Yeah, I'm glad that came across in the story, because that's how it seemed to me, you know, that I had, in some cases, I had a series of two or three conversations to say, hey, you told me this, but I checked with them. They said they haven't sold to you. Where are you getting that from? Oh, well, you know, we substituted, you know, product X, you know, for that.
Yeah,
and they were kind of, yeah, you know, what we get them when that's in season, you know. Mm-hmm. Well, but then it shouldn't be on your chalkboard right now. That's what chalk is for. Chalk is erasable. So,
they understand, I think, that they're dealing a lot in fantasy. I mean, it's marketing. And I
agree, but I wonder why. One thing that I've seen a lot in the comments section after the story, a lot of people saying, so what? But I would ask them, what other arena would you feel comfortable being lied to? You know, if you bought a designer, you know, dress and you took it home and you wore it the first time and then you kind of saw that the label was coming off and you pulled it back and it was like completely fraudulent, you know, it wasn't that designer at all. Or you bought a Rolex and you found out 2 months later oh, it's a fake, you know, yet still tells time. It looks like a Rolex. Your friends won't know it's not a Rolex, but you know that. And I just feel like food is a, it's such a trust-based system. So unlike other kinds of commerce, you're paying for that artisanal, pasture-raised, you know, heirloom, et cetera, et cetera.
One person that I thought was interesting, he said he'd worked in many restaurants that, quote, strive to meet this demand, but the honest truth is it's not a sustainable business model. So I thought that was a good point.
And I think it's really true. I've talked to a lot of small farmers who say the world cannot be fed the way I'm doing this, you know, the way I'm raising my pigs or the way I'm bringing these eggs to market. One egg farmer said, if you do everything right, raising, you know, laying hens, you feed them all the right things, you give them access to pasture, you have these chickens live a wonderful life, a dozen eggs would be $8. And Americans are not willing to pay $8.
They
can't, you know, the average. And I think some of this farm to table, it really is the purview or the kind of the privilege of people who have enough disposable income to really think about this stuff.
And that may not be the person owning the restaurant.
Yeah.
You quoted, this was a great quote. You quoted Greg Baker of The Refinery saying, one can starve on one's principles.
Well, and this is a chef who's very principled, who does the very best he can. You know, I think they've always been a little queasy about the term farm to table, but he and Rooster and the Till kind of down the street were some of the early adopters in terms of really forging those relationships with local farmers and food producers.
Let's talk about farmers markets. You also looked into the claims being made at farmers markets, and you found that they're in large part farmerless.
Yeah,
unfortunately.
Well, I'm from Northern California, and I'm fairly used to going to a farmers market that has actual farmers. You know, that sounds like such a silly thing, but when I moved to Florida, you know, I kind of went to the outdoor markets, and there were soap manufacturers and dream catchers and hot sauces, but not a lot of produce that looked local. You know, there were a lot of vendors selling things that, you know, whether that's apples or shallots or that just don't grow in Florida. And people seemed either not to notice that or to not care, I guess.
My impression, and tell me if this is true, is that people don't understand about resellers. They see someone, it's called a farmer's market, and there's a booth and there's people selling. They've got a lot of fruit and vegetables out, and they just assume it's from farmers.
Yeah, I mean, I've always kind of groused to my husband that in this state, if you buy it outdoors, it must be from a local farm. And I think that it's very important to make those distinctions. I'm a little surprised that there is no regulation and that at the state level, they don't require resellers to be marked as such. It seems so obvious to me that if you're at an outdoor market and you want to, and you're there because you want to be buying local, that the local farm should be somehow marked. You know, that there should be, if there's a vendor selling green, you know, yellow squash and zucchini next to another one, that you should be able to very clearly discern which one is actually from a local farm.
But in fact, you found that a lot of the produce that's being sold was grocery store rejects. It's what Publix didn't want.
Exactly.
And,
that had been through maybe five or six different hands, you know, on its
way.
Explain
that.
Well, so a lot of produce will be picked in Mexico, and it goes through two hands basically to get into the United States. It goes to a big, you know, wholesale place. And then it may get to, say, Lakeland, which is where, you know, the Publix headquarters is. And there's a lot of leftovers. And that leftover produce goes to another person, and then from that wholesaler, essentially, it may pass through two or three more hands before it reaches an outdoor market or even a farm stand, a side of the road farm stand. So you go to those farm stands thinking, yes, this guy right behind the counter must have picked this morning. And in fact, that the guy behind the counter has nothing to do with growing anything. He's just a middleman, and what, you know, the zucchini that you're buying from him has traveled, you know, several thousand miles to get to you.
It's not as nice as the zucchini that you would find at the grocery store.
Yeah. Well,
because
yeah.
They passed on it.
Yep.
What advice do you have for us after reading the articles and finding out that a lot of what we're being told is not true and it's not local. And we want to eat local. We want to go to the farmer's market and buy from a local farmer. What can you tell us? What advice can you give us?
Well, first, I would say invest 20 minutes of time in learning what grows here when. That's a very fundamental thing. You're very much at risk of being duped if you don't have basic information about what grows here. And then I would suggest a couple things. In the restaurant, if you go to a restaurant and it has specific farms mentioned on the chalkboard or on the menu, you know, you got your cell phone out. Google that farm. Are they actually a farm? Are they local? What does that farmer's website or Facebook page say they're growing right now?
What does local mean?
Yeah, well, don't you think that's something that should be, there should be some kind of universal definition? You know, there's no legal definition for local, sustainable, responsibly grown, all these terms. The only thing that really has kind of legal clout is certified organic. And there's very little in the way of punitive or kind of police work. If you misrepresent something on your menu in this way, in the way that we've been talking about, the fine may be $150. So that's not a powerful disincentive for restaurants, you know, or the outdoor markets. I think that, you know, you don't have to sell too many fraudulent pork chops to make up that $150 fine.
We're talking to Laura Riley, the food critic for the Tampa Bay Times and the author of the investigative series Farm to Fable at Tampa Bay Farm to Table Restaurants. You're Being Fed Fiction. Coming up,
they said it was wild Alaskan pollock, and in fact, the packaging says Chinese pollock and that it is treated with a chemical.
I'm Robin Sussingham, and this is Florida Matters. This is Florida Matters. I'm Robin Sussingham, speaking with Laura Riley, the food critic for the Tampa Bay Times, about her expose of farm-to-table restaurants and farmerless farmers markets. So we heard from one of the owners of Mermaid Tavern, which was featured in your report, and they're disturbed by the way that they were portrayed. They feel like it's going to hurt their business. They say they've been working for 5 years to support the community and uphold the highest standards related to food, beer, and wine. They also say that the same month that your article was written, the Florida Department of Hotels and Restaurants conducted a test of the proteins on our menu and found them to be exactly accurate. So what would you say to them? This is an email that came to us from Lux Devoid, who's the owner of the Mermaid Tavern.
Well, I think that I had several conversations with Lux, and I think that he's someone who has been fairly diligent about sourcing since the Mermaid Tavern started. I took an interest in that restaurant in particular because they had a big box that said, we source locally. All of our fish is local and or sustainably raised. So I drilled down on a number of things on their menu, and I did find that the shrimp that they were serving as Florida shrimp was, in fact, farmed Indian shrimp. And I do have proof of that.
So you stand by it.
I stand by that. And the pollock that they were using for their fish and chips, they said it was wild Alaskan pollock. And in fact, the packaging says Chinese pollock and that it is treated with a chemical, chemical preservative. So it's a frozen product treated with a chemical that, and the menu said none of our food is chemically treated. So, you know, I understand. I feel like Lux is someone who does care deeply. He cares about the community. He cares about giving people food that he can be proud of. And I think that there are plenty of things on the menu that are as advertised. I happened to find several that were not, and I'm sure that they've made changes over there. And I think that, as I said before, it's really hard to stay on top of several hundred ingredients. And sometimes I think there are misrepresentations at the distributor level.
Do you feel that exposing this was worth it for damage that might be done to restaurants that you obviously have reviewed favorably?
I feel that I guess my job is working for the readers. That's who I, you know, I'm not a booster for the restaurant community. And I think that some people are confused about what my role is. I'm a restaurant critic because I'm telling people where they should or shouldn't eat. And I'm giving people kind of a, you know, as in any critic, a preview of what an experience might be like. And I think that part of what I do is assessing the value of a restaurant, the money that you're going to pay, that, you know, the consumer is going to outlay $100 to go to this restaurant. If they're making claims that are untrue or even just embroidered, that value judgment changes, right? You know, so if I'm telling a consumer where to go on their anniversary, where to take their hard-earned dollars and spend that money, if a restaurant's lying or, you know, fibbing a little bit, I think that that's part of my job, is to assess the value then with that new information. So yes, I think that in the short term, some of these restaurants may be, you know, hurt by the revelations in this story. And actually, I've heard from chefs nationally who say that I've done them a disservice, that by calling people's attention to a few bad apples, I've, you know, tarnished everyone with the same brush, that I've made people skeptical about restaurant claims in general. And to that, I would say, I hope that's not the case, because I think there are plenty of chefs and restaurateurs who do precisely what they say they're doing. But I think all of us as consumers should be a little bit more skeptical and should ask more questions. I think that we've been very passive in this kind of transaction for a long time.
You also call out the restaurant Boca. That one had some egregious problems because they really advertise themselves as local farm-to-table restaurant.
I mean, the irony is that the Brandon location, or Riverside location that opened, I guess, at the beginning, maybe in December, I reviewed it. It was one of the last reviews I did before I went on this project. So, and I reviewed it very favorably. I actually think that their chefs are good. Their menus are lovely. Their settings are great. I just found enough that concerned me about the provenance of some of their food that I felt that it was important to share that.
Were there any restaurants that surprised you?
Well, I think all of the things that I found were surprising. You know, a place like Maritana Grill, that's a great restaurant. And you know, I've eaten there many times and reviewed it favorably many times. So to find out that they were very fast and loose with some of the details was surprising.
What were some of the details that they...
Well, they had, a section of the menu called Small Farms. And several of the things on that section were misrepresented. And I understand that they want to get in on the action. You know, they want to get in on the local sourcing, and certainly they have the deep pockets and the ability to do that if that's a very important thing for them. But clearly, they were, you know, substituting produce and proteins for what they were advertising on the section.
So there was one story that you told in the piece. I absolutely gasped when I saw what the upshot was. Tell the story about Gary Parks.
Well, you know, this is one that I still am up at night wondering if it's going to, you know, bite me. This is a guy who is a third generation strawberry farmer. His family has, you know, Parksdale Farm, et cetera. And he split off from them and for a while was doing this Park Family Hydro in Dover on Tanner Road. And I don't know what happened. I don't know why it went belly up why he stopped doing it.
But he's been selling at farmers markets.
He sells at many, like six different farmers markets.
And there are his, I guess, what is he selling? Strawberries?
Strawberries and peppers and squashes and those kinds of things. And there's a little handwritten sign that says, yes, I'm the farmer that grew these. And above on the kind of awning over his stall, there's a sign that says, you know, no pesticides, local, et cetera, et cetera.
And you drove out to take a look at his operation.
Well, you know, I met him at a bunch of these outdoor markets and talked to him and thought, well, let's take a look, you know. And so I drove out to where the farm was. And, yeah, there were 2 acres of hydroponic stackers out there, but they clearly had been derelict for a couple years. You know, they're all kind of leaning and bleached and, you know, 5-foot weeds growing up between the rows, nothing, you know, just kind of shriveled dirt.
Abandoned.
Yeah, abandoned. You know, it looked like kind of like a scene out of The Walking Dead. You know, you could kind of imagine one zombie kind of, you know, ambling out. And so I had to go back to him and say, Gary, you know, what's going on? I went up there. There's nothing there. And he said, oh, well, that's the experimental plot. And I said, okay, well, where's the real plot? Oh, I don't tell journalists where or anyone because I was having a theft problem. And I said, well, you know, I won't reveal the address of it. And I won't, I promise not to steal anything or to you know, let anyone know where this is if you'll tell me where it is. And he declined. And so I went up with a photographer, and basically he said it was elsewhere on Tanner Road. So I went the length of Tanner Road, going down every driveway, every side street. You know, I Google Earthed it. I did everything in my power to find. And two acres of hydroponics is not a small amount of hydroponics. So you should be able to have some inkling of that from the road. I also stopped and asked maybe 20 different neighbors and small business owners in that area, do you know of a hydroponic farm on Tanner Road? And they said, oh, yeah, there was one a couple years ago down, you know. So no one knew of an extant one. They only knew of the defunct one. So I you know, in the story, I was very careful to say, I'm not, this is all I know. All I know is I could not find one. He says there is one. He refused to tell me where it is. So that's kind of how I had to leave that.
And
that
you also story. Saw boxes by his van, I think, that
yes.
looked like they had just come from the wholesale
yes.
fruit place. Even if you're just buying from a reseller at the farmer's market, are you getting a better deal than you would if you went to the grocery store? Is it cheaper? I mean, is that a reason to shop there?
I think sometimes it is cheaper. I think that, you know, if you go, we spent a little time at the Plant City Flea and Farm outdoor market, and most of that is wholesale, so it's mostly people coming to be resellers. But there is a small section that is, you know, you can buy single pieces as opposed to whole boxes.
But if you went to the farmer's market, if you're at the farmer's market, if you don't go out to the actual, you know, where it's very clear that you're at the wholesale distribution point for fruit, but if you're at the farmer's market, say you're at the Lakeland farmer's market and there's a stand there clearly with somebody reselling fruit, do you think you're getting a better deal? Did you notice?
I think it'll probably be fairly comparable to a low-end, you know, supermarket. I don't think that you're getting – I think the reason we go to the outdoor markets is not a price-driven thing. We go for the experience. We go to have our dogs in strollers and to eat a little snick-snack. You know, it's an experience. It's like it's an outing. And I think that for most of us, it makes us feel good about ourselves. We go to somehow get closer to where our food is from.
And you feel like somehow you're supporting local farmers, although it sounds like in many cases you aren't.
Yeah, I think you're supporting local business people, but perhaps not local farmers.
Right. Laura Riley is the food critic for the Tampa Bay Times. Laura, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
That's it for today's show. You can join the conversation on our Facebook page, or you can send an email to floridamatters@wusf.org. Florida Matters is a production of WUSF Public Media. Our engineer is Craig George. I'm Robin Sessingham. Thanks for listening.